In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Welcome to EMS Office Hours. I am Jim Hoffman.
And this is Josh Knapp.
And today, guys, we're going to talk about something that's been sort of in the public eye a little bit, I think, and talking about what I guess people are seeing as a perceived shortage of EMS providers. Before we do that, guys, be sure if you're not following the show, if you're not subscribe, go to iTunes, please. Subscribe to the show. Leave a review. Leave a comment. It really helps the show out when it comes to rankings there. It doesn't give us any money, but it does help us with the rankings and get the show out there. The link on the show page. And also you can go to emsseo.com/iTunes. That'll redirect you directly to the show page there. So, Josh, how have you been doing?
I've been a happy little clam here in the Big Apple. Actually, it's as we were discussing prior to the show, it's recredentialing time, the thing everybody in EMS absolutely loves because we live to be tested. So, you know, I'm going through that right now and dealing with the trials and tribulations of relearning the protocols. And actually the hardest part is relearning the changes. So I have to forget the stuff that I've known by rote and learn, you know, whatever nonsense is.
That is the pain of it all. So Josh, I do have somebody that was commenting. Guy, what happened was, Josh, I saw some of the articles out there and I just made a post, you know, asking the question if the shortage of EMS, you know, shortage of personnel that you're seeing, you know, not having enough providers to supply agencies, is a relation to an actual shortage or is it a relation to, you know, not getting paid enough? And, you know, the question I asked was sort of, you know, maybe we should, you know, stop beating the let's get a college degree before we raise money type thing, you know, raise salaries. And that maybe this is something that will allow us to, you know, well, not allow us, but something that might force the hand of increasing salaries. You know, I got some comments on that and just interesting to me, you know, some of the comments very, I think very insightful and even raised further questions, you know, because it's not as simple as let's pay money, we'll get more people or let's get a college degree and we'll get higher salaries. You know, it's like two ends of that spectrum, you know what I mean? And you get so many people who say, well, if we get college degrees, we'll be just like nurses and the salaries will suddenly, you know, skyrocket and we'll make all this additional money.
Yeah.
But, to me, Josh, listen, this is something you and I have, are beating a drum, right?
Yeah. We've
talked about this.
But it's worthwhile. It's worthwhile bringing up every so often, worthwhile continually putting it on the table.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that we've been talking about this for so long. I mean, you know, the podcast has been going on at least, you know, 10 years.
Longer.
8 years. Right. And we've brought this topic up many, many times. And that argument of college degree and salaries increasing to me is becoming less and less of a valid argument, you know, because people are going to college and they're spending an exorbitant amount of money to go to college. They don't want to graduate and make $12, $13 an hour.
No, and there's no reason to. And again, you know, it's like the, you know, you talk about social media and where this initial conversation came out of. Mm-hmm. The big one, the big counter is, oh, learn a trade. You know, you don't have to go to college, but you can learn a trade and be out practically debt-free or debt-free and blah, blah, blah. And that's full of shit as well. Because right. You know, to go into these trade schools, they cost between $10,000 and $30,000. And then you have to go through the steps before you become the expert in that field. You have to do field time and such like that. So, you know, there are costs related to that as well. And the same thing goes for EMS. When I started, and I'm sure it was even less when you started, but a paramedic program was $5,000 to $6,000. Now they're I've heard them as high as $15,000 to become a paramedic. And in you get out and then all of a sudden you're making $13 an hour, even $20 an hour. It's just not there's no payback when you can go and do something else. You know, I know that some people have a calling to EMS and that's a noble thing. And there's an aspect that is really that should not be undervalued. But
absolutely. Listen, I always tell people, right? Listen, I'm all for, you know me, I'm all for education, all for increasing our knowledge base and doing what we can to be better providers in the field, right?
Right.
I always tell people, if you want to get a college education and you're going to get a college degree, don't do it thinking that you're going to suddenly get all this money rolling into the bank. Do it because you're going to be a better provider. Do it because you're going to be maybe more marketable for advancement, things like that. Don't do it thinking that somehow it's going to suddenly raise your salary.
Quite honestly, there are very few things that you can go. I mean, if you want to just go out and make money, go and get a degree in finance.
Yeah.
I mean, really. I mean, that's medicine or EMS. You know, I know a couple of doctors. They just got out of medical school. They're starting their internship, and they're not. It's not even that they're being paid very little. They've signed into a contract to help them pay for their student loans for medical school, and it's such a draconian contract that they can't pass gas without asking permission, and they're locked into 5 years of poverty level wages. And they're doctors, surgeons.
Well, I've known people that have done something like that where they've let the hospital or whatever pay for them to become nurses, and they become nurses and they're locked into the hospital for like 5 years.
Right.
You know, same type of thing where, you know, they kind of stuck in that thing. But
I'll bet you they pay the nurses still better than they pay the new doctors.
They might. You might be right.
Yeah. Listen,
I have Jeremy in the room here with us, Josh. He was one of the guys that was commenting on the Facebook. Jeremy, are you there? I know this is your first time. I'm not sure if you can hear me or not.
Oh, well, he sounds like he had the same problem I did. I hear him very faintly.
Jeremy, I do hear you, just very low, bro.
Okay, I'll try to speak up. How are y'all doing today?
Great.
Good enough.
Awesome. Is that a little bit better?
Absolutely, Jeremy.
Okay, so you posed what I find to be a very interesting thing on Facebook. Interesting enough, I actually commented, which I normally don't do on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah, not only that, you're calling into this podcast discussing it, so it must hit home.
Well, it does, because, you know, I'm one of those medics who has a degree. I got my degree from Western Carolina, and to be honest with you, I haven't used the full potential of the degree. I'll put that up front. And
what's your degree in?
I have a degree in emergency medical care from Western Carolina
University. Oh, wow. Okay.
And I'll be forthfront. I haven't done a whole lot to maximize the degree. There have been plenty of people who have gone on to become, you know, leaders in the EMS profession, directors, you know, what have you, go on to PA school, med school, you know, everything else. But, you know, I don't think that the degree is the answer to the EMS problem today.
Yeah, and that's something too, Jeremy. I've always kind of felt that. I feel that degree is great, but like you just mentioned, right, a lot of people that get the degree, they're looking to be managers. They're looking to be directors. They're looking to be go to PA school, be nurses, things like that. They're not looking to stay on the ambulance, lifting grandma up, you know, going to these, you know, low-income areas and breaking their back and getting spit on and you know, wrestling with people and things like that. That's not what they're looking to do when they're getting that degree. They're looking to, you know, looking for the a return on that investment, you know?
Right.
And people and the constant argument of, well, you know, nurses and doctors and everybody else did it. Why would it be different for EMS? And you know, one thing that I know Dominic in the Facebook and the commentary had said that, you know, the better question is getting more people willing to put up with the conditions, you know, for the amount of pay that you get it. You know, it's not the question isn't let's get a degree and then we're going to, overnight, we're going to be making, you know, $25-$30 an hour. It's just not going to happen. You have too many people that are willing to do it for free when you talk volunteer end of it, and people that are new to the systems that are willing to get paid less until they move on to another career or something else that pays more money. You know?
Right. And I think that's what that gentleman Scott and I got into for quite a lengthy discussion the other day is,
yeah.
You know, he was harping on, you know, education to become a profession. You know, if we could monitor our own people and take care of problem children ourselves without repercussion, you know, as long as it's within the letter of the law, you know, we could have a profession. You know, nursing has different levels, but once you're in nursing, you're in nursing.
Right.
If, you know, I was actually thinking about this morning, and, you know, paramedic, an EMS paramedic is an entry-level position, no matter how you look at it. A nurse can start in anywhere, and if you're not good at being a nurse, you can go work in a nursing home. If you're not good at being a paramedic, you're...
That's a horrible statement, by the way. If you think about it, that's a horrible statement. I mean, we sort of rely, you know, in this day and age on nursing homes. So that's another conversation of the standards we put there.
You're right. But they're what I'm trying, you're exactly correct. That is a horrible statement. Unfortunately, if you've been in EMS any time, there are some great nursing home nurses. But those who can't make it in the ER and those who can't make it on the floor and those who can't make it in urgent care, where do they get put, honestly?
Yeah.
There's places.
In management.
I'm sorry?
In management.
It's the same in EMS?
No, not, yeah, well, yeah, not.
Some places.
I think that to get into EMS management, you have to survive the attrition first. And then there's the aspect of whether or not there are some differences, whether you're not a good clinician or a good organizer. I mean, I know some guys who were never really very good clinicians, but they are great organizers, and they really flow right into the whole management spectrum very well. They fit into that.
But fair enough. Where I was trying to go with that is once you get into the nursing profession, you have options. But the options for a paramedic within EMS, if you can't move up into management and you can't, you know, we are very, very limited. Yes, we can educate ourselves to death, which we do. Every time I go to in-service, you know, there are new concepts that weren't taught when I was, when I went through paramedic school. And that tells me that education in EMS is not stagnant.
Now,
we do have options. We can move into the ERs that takes us out of EMS. We can move into critical care transport that moves us out of EMS. We can move into the cardiac cath lab that moves us out of EMS. That doesn't solve any problem whatsoever.
You know, I think one of the problems, because I'm listening to you as far as moving into the ER and moving into, and I'm a medic in New York State, and those options, you know, in terms of moving inside, are really not options for EMS here unless you get another job. And usually it's a job as a tech, so it's lower paying than being a medic.
That's another thing too, Josh, right? You think about that, like Jeremy just said, right? A lot of times EMS, you end up being qualified to work in an ER as a tech or something like that. But then a lot of places, your salary goes even lower than you were as making a medic on the ambulance.
Right.
And you end up doing, sometimes a lot of cases, you end up doing a lot more. You know, you're running around, you're on your feet all day in the ER, running around, chasing your tail, helping this one, helping that one. And it's even more work for even less money.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it depends on the organization as well and how they view EMS. I mean, if they view EMS as a response agency or a specific role in terms of, a needing a clinician on transport, clinical transport, then you're probably going to be more focused on the quality of your service and the type of service than the amount. If your organization just views on it as body haulers, you're going to be focused on the amount of service that you can provide, the amount of transports, not paying attention to the skill level required in those transports. And that type of stuff is not only debilitating almost in the terms of, we still, no matter what how you slice it, we still are in that realm of patient interaction, patient interface, and that takes energy, time, and emotional content. So you can't just finish with one person and then just pick up and do another without it taking a toll on the body and on the mind.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you guys truly feel that there's a shortage of providers? Or do you think it's more like some of the people had said, Jeremy, in the Facebook thread there, that it's more of an issue of pay, you know, being able to pay provider, being willing to pay the providers that are there, and then the people that are qualified are going other places, no matter what. I mean, I know people that have been in EMS not making money, they go start working in the tech field, you know. You know what I'm saying? So is that what the case is? You know, really, really not really a shortage of actual people, but a shortage of, you know, people willing to be, you know, get paid.
Honestly, I think it is both. If you look back in 2007, 2008, when the bubble burst and the economy went, you know, really sour, what happened? The people who lost their jobs out of tech, out of big bank, out of corporate world, they come to fire EMS and police. And now that the economy is better, you know, those people have more options. They can get back into what they were doing with their higher salaries and everything else. So, yes, I think it is a combination of money and a shortage of people and probably a shortage of qualified programs to try to funnel more qualified people into EMS.
So, Jeremy, this is Josh. And the clarifier that I'm wondering from your point of view, is it, that why does that pressure exist that keeps our wages low? Is it a matter that we have an inability to collectively bargain? Is it that we're just separated amongst all these disciplines? Some were with fire, some were police, some were independent hospitals, some were private companies, or is it the volunteers who are willing to do the job for free?
Well, I commented very carefully on that Facebook post bringing up volunteers. I don't think that is the whole issue. I think it's a combination of all those issues. You know, if look at when you go purchase gas, all right? You look at gas station A that has it for 10 cent more, and you have it, you go to gas station B that has it for 10 cent less because they're willing to give it to you for less. Volunteers are willing to do it free, and God bless them for doing it, you know, being away from their families for all hours, in all weather, in all conditions, you know, great. I love them for it. But when it comes down to it, those municipalities that rely on volunteers don't have to pay for lack of a better word, professionals, who, you know, do it full time, you know, multiple days a week, to come in and provide a service to their community.
So it's really the communities that are almost subsidizing poorer service by saying, we're not willing to pay for this because we can get it for free. And they are, I've said this, and Jim and I have discussed this before. I think it's a matter also of community education. Do you know what you're buying when you set up a volunteer service versus a paid service?
I'm not sure if it's not willing or not able. You get into some smaller communities where I'm sure that they would like a set standard of service, but they just don't have the tax base.
So, but what, and I understand that, but they still pay for fire, they still pay for police, and the...
They pay for garbage men and everything else.
They pay, right, they pay for the road repair.
I hate that argument of, well, the taxes aren't there for it, but, you know, they have taxes for everything else. If you're going to have an essential service, because even the volunteer area as well, right? So many times with volunteers, I've sat there in as a paid, you know, EMS, where I was ALS and BLS was volunteer. And I would hear them toning out the volunteer agencies 3-4 times to get them to come out, and they wouldn't come out because it was abdominal pain, or it was a lifting assistance, something like that. But, you know, so then eventually they would upgrade the call to a paramedic level call so that the paid agency would go ahead and respond based on their guidelines. But yet if it was a call where it was a wreck or a cardiac arrest, they come out of the woodwork to respond to the call. They were picking and cherry picking the call that they wanted to me, the call that they were looking to respond to. And that happened in several areas that I worked in, where I worked as the paid ALS provider, and the BLS level was always a volunteer.
I think it's ourselves. I think we're cutting ourselves off at the knees, quite honestly, Jim. And you, and this is, again, going back to previous conversations, but Jeremy, you know, I'll sort of fill you in a little bit. Our roots, I mean, both Jim and I started as volunteers many years ago, right? I started as a volunteer. That's where I got my first licks on the bus, and I sort of learned some of the basics of patient, you know, patient interaction and how to work EMS. And then I went off onto a paid job, and that's where I did it full time. And that's sort of finished the polish on, you know, who I am today as a provider. And I think we all sort of deep in our hearts and our guts owe a little bit, or feel like we owe a little bit to volunteerism, which is a great thing, but there's a point in which you have to grow up. There's a point in which you have to say, okay, we've evolved past that. We are an integral part of first response services.
And healthcare.
And we need to be paid and trained and maintain that training, and even as importantly, have some standards around it. How many professional, Jeremy, I'll put this to you out, you know, down south, how many guys do you know that work more than one job who are paid EMS?
Almost everybody.
And what is that? I mean, do you ever cringe when you get on the bus and you get with a guy who's just finished his third double in a row, and you're like looking at them and saying, why are you even in the seat next to me? I mean, you know, you start to get a little worried about, you know, your safety as well as the, you know, your partner's.
Well, you know, I'll let you in on something, and let me, since you don't know who I am, you know, I come from volunteer as well, both rescue and fire. I've got backgrounds in both, you know, more than 25 years. And that, you know, I went paid in 2000. What you said about volunteerism is exactly correct. You know, it is a great way to get a start. And I apologize. I went on a tangent there. What was your question?
Essentially, are we cutting ourselves off at the knees? By still owing to volunteers and volunteerism and the whole roots that we came from, you know, are we now at a point where that is maybe for the professionalism and to maintain standards that we need both on safety and clinical practice? Is it time to move past that? Which is a really, you know, I mean, that question just pours gasoline on the fire. It really does. I mean, people come out of the woodwork who've been volunteering for their entire life. And, you know.
I think that is going to be very community specific. But what I think, you go to the other professions of fire and rescue, and especially the volunteer agencies. To survive, those agencies have to be very in tune with their community. You know, they ask for donations, and they have cooking drives, and they raise their own funds, so their community knows who they are. Whereas EMS, paid EMS, is really, really in its infancy of being in touch with the community. We've always been, okay, we're going to ride around in trucks, and, you know, we're going to be seen just a little bit. And the community doesn't really grasp on to, hey, we're here for this purpose, and, you know, we're here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We just know that, or the community pretty much just knows that we show up when we call, or when they call 911, and they don't know where we come from.
So what's the step to adolescence? How do we get to the next step? And what does that, and more importantly, just from your point of view, you know, what does that next step look like? Is it, are we going to, because talking about volunteerism, again, not putting it down, but you don't see volunteer nurses, you don't see volunteer doctors, unless they're overseas or in a war zone or in a, you know, in a catastrophic situation. In the normal day-to-day doings of business, that services you pay for. So, you know, all of a sudden we have a dividing line. Now, is the new look of this the elimination of volunteers?
Question. My guess would be politically not anytime soon. Too many commissioners, too many councils, too many townships.
No, forget about the reality. No, I understand exactly what you're saying, and I think that you're right on. I think that politically that's the mountain that we have to climb. But in order to get to that adolescence, the question really is it a good thing or not? You know, what's the reality?
I think the reality is volunteerism started to die when we no longer worked in our communities, when we could no longer leave our employer to go help with the community, when we started working in big city outside of our small townships. That is where I believe it started dying out. It's not a professionalism thing. It's not an education thing. It's an availability thing. And unfortunately, many, many volunteer fire departments can't provide the same level of service time-wise and response time-wise as a paid career staff.
It's also, I think, too, like you guys had mentioned, too, when you've got paid people having to work two or three jobs to make, you know, make their bills, make ends meet, where is the extra time they're going to have to volunteer? You know, that's a whole nother end of it. I think a lot of this, guys, too, is perception. I mean, when you approach the people that make the decisions on how much we get paid and all that, you know, they look at the perception of EMS and what we do and what they see in the news and what they see, you know, going on, you know, and when they know there's people willing to volunteer, even if it's not that many or not that big of an element, it still saves them money. And when they see things like, a 65-year-old guy that retired, and now he just becomes an EMT and starts working in EMS, you know, they look at that as, okay, well, you know, how serious a job is this, you know? And, you know, I'm sorry, you know, that's another discussion, I guess. But to me, you know, somebody coming into this field, you know, at that age, it makes the profession look like it's playtime, you know. It makes it look like, oh, you know, just come on, we'll take anybody. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter anything. You know, when in reality, this job is you know, not really, you know, it's a young man's type job. And if you've been in this job, you know, for any length of time, you know the stress that it takes on your body and your mind and stuff, you know. And like I said, I feel like a big part of it is the perception of what the powers that be, you know, feel we actually do. And like Josh has said earlier, I think some of it is an education issue. And not education for us, but educating the public on, you know, what we do and how important it is to communities.
Yeah, and I think it's also very much EMS system dependent. You brought up the small garage systems, you know, one of which, you know, we may or may not have come from, that may or may not have done a really good job of representing what we do to fight for our existence. Right. And, you know, unfortunately, our garage closed up, which was, you know, a real detriment to the community that we served. It's being served by a bigger system now, just as capable, just not as around as much.
Right. And you know, it's the comfort that somebody has, because, you know, so if we look at the media and we look at the news, we look at how we get our information, it really does mostly come out of big cities. So when the news comes up about EMS responding and such like that, it comes out of municipalities that have EMS and are able to respond, and, you know, the cameras are able to be there and see us. And that, I believe, also contributes, because it gives people who live in more rural communities or communities that may have a volunteer system the false sense of security that, oh, we have EMS. If, you know, if I have an issue that I need an ambulance, I'll be able to just pick up the phone, dial 911, and somebody will be there in a little bit. And the reality is just the opposite, is that in some of these places, it can take, you know, hours for you to get help. And, you know, so there you are sitting there with your false sense of security. And then when you need it, you're not getting it. It's a hell of a lesson to learn, and maybe one that you're not passing on to the community.
Right.
Yeah. Listen, guys, you know, I think we kind of gave some good points today. I don't want to just keep going around in circles with it. And, you know, cause we could pretty much go off on numerous tangents when it comes to this. Cause like I said, and like some of the comments in the Facebook thread, there's a lot of different facets that you can kind of, you know, hit with this, different areas you can hit. And as always, I always say, we don't have the solutions on this show, but we just try to get the conversation going or to keep it going. And in the hopes that somewhere, some way, you know, someone might actually listen and take to heart some of the things that we say and motivate other people, you know, to get involved. I mean, the three of us are on this show today, and we're involved, we're engaged, you know, with this topic and what goes on in the industry. And I hope that people listening will get just as engaged and start thinking about, you know, this bigger picture, and, you know, not just get on board the bandwagon of the popular thinking of, well, we get college degrees, we'll all be professionals and we'll be just like nurses and we'll start making more money. But, you know,
I would love to hear
much, much bigger than that. You know, the problem is much bigger than that, and different, you know, and for many different reasons, like some of what we talked about, you know, today.
So I would love to see in the comments in this show, if we circled back to the initial question, what is the road to better pay? How do the working EMS get, you know, a living wage so they don't have to work themselves to death or be in a dangerous situation for themselves or their patients because they've worked too many shifts in a row just to pay the rent and put food on the table?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
yeah, Mecklenburg EMS just partook in a study with the National Registry about EMS retention and burnout, and you know how we are physically. And I think that everybody who looks at this problem is missing the point that we're all working multiple jobs just to survive.
Right.
I think that may be the biggest part. You know, maybe sometimes the second job becomes your primary source of income, and you know, there you go.
Yeah.
So just that little food for thought.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Jeremy, thanks for joining us, man. I appreciate you jumping on.
Yeah, and, thank you.
And giving us some feedback. We always love having, you know, other people on here to give their points of view and you know, engage with us and you know, bring up topics and even the thought process of something that we don't even think of. You know, I come in here, I have my own mindset of how I'm approaching this. And then you listen to other people and it kind of gets you thinking, yeah, it's not really such a, you know, black and white thing. This is a huge gray sort of area on that. So, Jeremy, I appreciate it, man. I really appreciate you joining me and Josh today.
Hey, I appreciate you having me, and y'all have a great holiday.
All right. Well, you're always welcome in the future, man. You want to jump on us, let me know. We go get John here.
All right, I'll do it.
All right, man.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
All right, Josh. So we'll end it there, man. All right.
Another show where we raise questions without answers.
Well, like I said, man.
How productive are we?
This is what – that's why it's called office hours. This is what gets talked about in crew rooms and in front of the ambulances. And sometimes I like to, you know, get everybody else's, you know, opinion on it and get it out there. Because like I said, I think this is one of those topics that, you know, you can talk about. We could talk about this. We could have a show called EMS Pay.
And I think, could.
And every week you can talk about a different, you know, element of pay and how it goes and where it gets to. So I think that, you know, when you think about it, you can definitely have something like that going on. So
I think, Josh, we need to keep the pot stirred on this, Jim. I really do. I think it, as long as we keep it in the lexicon and we continue to discuss it, we are on that. That is the path to an increased awareness. That will eventually be on the path to increased reward.
Yeah. All right, Josh, I'm going to end it there, man. What anything you got going on you want to let anybody know about before we move on?
No. You know, if you want the best oxygen wrench in the world, you know, come to my site on o2wrench.com or wantanu, wantynu.com. I still have plenty of stock. As I've mentioned before, I'm no longer manufacturing them. I'm getting out of the business. So I have stock of some, and, you know, catch as catch can. First come, first serve.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to – anybody interested, I do have a brand new a digital book that I put out. It's about EMS differential diagnoses, and it's something you can download for free. It kind of covers things that might be going on with the patient other than what they initially call for. So you can check that out. It's very, very, you know, quick sort of reference guide you can use on calls or after a call. You're doing documentation, kind of figuring out what might be going on with that patient. Kind of, I think, opens up your eyes a little bit on some clinical presentations you can keep an eye out for on patients. You can get it for free. It's at emsseo.com/DX. You can go check that out. Of course, there'll be links in the notes here for both that and Josh's site as well. And that's it, Josh.
Sounds good, Jim.
All right. As always, guys, I am Jim Hoffman.
And Josh Knapp.
Stay safe.